All right, so the goal of my presentation is to discuss the experiences that our Disparity Center has had in conducting a pilot project among residents of public housing by discussing three things. I want to talk about first the problem of oral health disparities, just briefly. And second, I want to talk about the approach that we took in this project of community-based research. And then lastly, the lessons that we learned in this with this whole experience. And I have no relationships to disclose. So first, the problem. We're all well aware that racial and ethnic minorities, particularly those living in poverty, suffer the greatest from oral disease. And it can only be expected that individuals living in public housing have a high burden of oral disease. What we know is that the median household income is typically well below the national poverty line. In fact, nationally, it's below $8,000 a year. And of families with young children, specifically in Boston, over 90% of them are racial and ethnic minorities. Although we haven't directly observed the oral health of public housing residents, we have observed a few things. In our work, we have collaborated with the Healthy Baby, Healthy Child program that's conducted out of the Boston Public Health Commission. And we've paired up hygienists with public health nurses who go to the homes of these clients and have been looking at the oral health. And what we found is that the clientele are primarily public housing residents, and that 36% of the children aged 0 to 3 had signs of early childhood caries. We also found that 73% of mothers had untreated decay. Also in 2001, the Boston Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System began collecting a demographic variable indicating housing status. And with that demographic variable, they were able to look at differences from among public housing residents compared to non-public housing residents. And what they found was that public housing residents had poorer health status for virtually all measures, even after controlling for socioeconomic status, which gets at the possibility that there's something about the interaction between environment and social issues going on among public housing residents. And also that they were twice as likely as non-residents to have not had a preventive dental visit in the last 2 years. Most importantly is the fact that the public housing residents themselves have identified oral health as a major issue. There was a health questionnaire that's been passed out after one program, which has a van that goes around to the housing developments. They have a health questionnaire that they hand out afterwards to get some information on health. And there was an open-ended question which asked, what personal health issues concern you the most? And 17% of them volunteered that oral health was of concern. And also, the Community Committee for Health Promotion, which I'll talk about shortly, conducts a flyering and information survey program where they actually have passed out this health survey to over 1,000 residents to ascertain health information from them. And when asked, what health concerns do you currently have, 55% reported that dental health was a current health concern. And this was second only to safety and violence, which was 58%. So the approach of community-based research, well, we can ask why is community-based research the obvious answer for the approach? And first and foremost is that the research topic is of importance to the community. We know that that's one of the primary tenets of community-based participatory research, is that we have this commonality of research interests. Also, we were fortunate enough to have partnerships readily available to us that had access into the community as already, that also had community representation among these partnerships, which I'll also talk about. And thirdly is that the possibility for significant benefit to the community existed through the provision of preventive services. And also that public housing itself provides an ideal infrastructure for community-based participatory research. So just to orient you briefly to Boston Public Housing, it is the largest landlord in Boston. And it houses 26,000 low and moderate income individuals and provides housing assistance to 25,000 more. It's also strategically located near community health centers. And within each development, there are tenant task forces and research resource and development centers, which are comprised of the community members themselves. And also it has central administration and financing by a housing authority. So the pilot project, Understanding Oral Health Status of Public Housing Residents in Light of Culture, Social Influence, and the Physical Environment, consisted of conducting 7 focus groups across 2 family housing developments. The focus groups were comprised of Hispanic mothers of young children, usually age 0 to 5. And focus groups were conducted on site, and childcare and a meal were provided. So the partnership for this project is the following. First, I want to identify the Partners in Health and Housing Prevention Research Center. This is a CDC-funded PRC that's located just next door at the Boston University School of Public Health. And their main objective is to address the health issues of residents of public housing. And they are partnered, they have equal partnership with the Boston Housing Authority, which is the authority that administers Boston Public Housing, and also the Boston Public Health Commission and the Community Committee for Health Promotion. So despite the fact that they were this sort of clearinghouse for partnerships, it was necessary that we engaged in partnership building specifically with the Boston Housing Authority and also the Community Committee for Health Promotion. So I'll just highlight what the Community Committee for Health Promotion was. It's comprised of residents of Boston Housing Authority family developments. And it also has community leaders and agency representatives, particularly agencies or programs that serve residents of Boston Public Housing. And they are key partners in reviewing research, assisting in the design. They are primarily responsible for selecting which sites you're going to be conducting research at. They'll make recommendations. They will provide endorsements for both PRC and non-PRC affiliated research. And they also provide this FISP program, which I mentioned earlier, which gives us some nice information on the health of these residents. I want to talk about the Resident Health Advocate Program, which is actually administered out of the Boston Housing Authority and the Prevention Research Center. This is a program which provides annual training for a group of residents across the Boston Housing Authority family developments. You can see here the various things that they're trained in, first aid all the way to cultural competency and the role of being a health resource. When they complete their training, they are given paid internships with the Boston Housing Authority within the housing developments. And this may or may not include participating as research personnel on both PRC and non-PRC affiliated research among the public housing developments. You can see here a picture of some of the graduates. All right. So these two entities, the Community Committee for Health Promotion and the Resident Health Advocate Program, really played a key role in project design, both for the pilot project, which I'm going to be discussing, and for the planning of our community-based intervention trial, which we'll be embarking on in the future. So presentations were given to both the Community Committee for Health Promotion and the Resident Health Advocates themselves to discuss which sites we might want to do these focus groups at. Also, who from the community could help participate in the research, what recruitment materials should look like, and in fact, they even developed a subcommittee for review of the research instruments. We met at a local diner with a few of the community members and went over in detail the focus group instrument, the moderator's guide. And they also discussed how much community member involvement they felt should be in existence. We had significant community engagement in the project implementation. In fact, they were heavily involved, and by heavily I mean they did everything essentially except for conduct the focus groups. We had resident health advocates from each of the two developments that we conducted these focus groups, and tenant task force members and a resource and development center director. They conducted recruitment, so they got lists from the Boston Housing Authority of eligible women, which we could not see because we were not entities of Boston Housing Authority, but because they were, they could have these lists. So they had lists of eligible women, they called them, they went to their house, they informed them of the opportunity for research, they scheduled the focus groups, they escorted the women to the focus groups, including placing reminder calls, and they were present during the focus groups. They also organized childcare, they selected and coordinated an appropriate food vendor, and they provided access to the community room. And this required significant partner support. So support from the RHA program itself to provide the time for these resident health advocates to help us, and also support from the Boston Housing Authority to provide these lists, among other things. When we had project results, we presented our results to the Community Committee for Health Promotion, and they provided assistance with interpretation and sometimes provided context for some of the responses that we got as part of the focus groups. So in all of this, we had some significant lessons learned. First and foremost is that community-based research really relies on effective partnerships. And it's necessary to recognize the various entities and that comprise, that really provide access to your community. So, and also to recognize the appropriate oversight for research activities. So to illustrate my point, I have up here the partners, which I've listed as the Boston Housing Authority, the CCHP, and the PRC. And you have to think about your partnerships on a personnel level. So if you're working with individuals from the RHA program, that those individuals are overseen by the BHA and the PRC. Tenant task force members provide representation on the community committee, and they're overseen by the Boston Housing Authority. Resource and Development Center, and then also there's a steering committee that is comprised of members from all partners. And then as we get down to actual tasks, to complete these tasks, you really have to understand the lines of communication in terms of your partners. So partnership building is important, and effective partnership building is vital to success. Second is that the benefit of community engagement, to recognize the benefit of community engagement in all aspects of the research. We really could not have done this unless we had these community members. They, oftentimes, they were motivated community leaders that the members of the community knew themselves and respected. And just to highlight some of the focus group results, particularly in thinking about planning for our community-based intervention trial, when we were talking with these women about the possibility of providing prevention services on site, we found the same fatalistic notion that Dr. Ismail talked about in the previous session, that they don't believe that oral health, that oral disease can be prevented. And so education needed to be a key aspect of the community-based intervention trial. And they also helped us think about exactly how we should conduct recruitment, what, even down to the detail, what our recruitment materials should look like. And they really want to be engaged. They see themselves as the people to really conduct recruitment, get people involved. You can see the three bullets down here that Nudie, who was the Resource and Development Center director, they respect her. They listen to her. They also said, we could tell the moms, we could get everybody out here for this service delivery. And they also came up with the idea of a calling tree, that they could each participate in making calls to remind moms that we would be on site providing oral health assessments, fluoride varnish applications, and to really mobilize the community and get the moms there with their kids. So third, I think this is obvious, but it's important to really think about and be aware of as you engage in community-based research, and that is that there's a really delicate balance that exists between, as researchers, our agenda and our timeline and the timeline of the community. And I don't know what the answer to this is yet, but I think it's important to communicate to your community partners and educate them on the timeline that we are under with funding cycles and grant applications and things like that, so that they're aware of the constraints that we're under, and also to not make empty promises to them about specific timelines and deliverables. So I think it's necessary to have a dialogue about the timeline. And last, which has also been mentioned in the previous session, that the distrust and reluctance to participate in research is common, that we have the Tuskegee trials and even more recently in the 90s with the Havasupai tribes, and that the way to get around this and the most important thing to do is to emphasize the benefits of the research. And what we found was that if we led with the benefits that we would be providing to the community, that we would have a much more positive experience in working with that. And this has kind of brought us to our next steps, and this community engagement is going to be requisite for the next several years as we're planning the community-based intervention trial as part of Creed 2, where we'll be conducting, we'll be doing it among all of the family housing developments in Boston. We'll have 10 intervention sites, 10 control sites. All of the sites will be receiving oral health assessments and fluoride varnish applications, which is that really tangible benefit that the community members buy into. We'll be extending the resident health advocate program to include training in oral health so that people can become oral health advocates. And they will be the ones delivering the motivational interviewing intervention. And that's it. The lessons learned will help us be successful in these next steps, and I'm sure we'll learn a lot more. So.